Good morning and thank you for being here. The chair appreciates the members and the public for their patience and the change of venue and the change of times. We don't always know exactly how long the meetings that precede us will last or even how long the meetings we are in will last. Chair would like to begin by thanking our Sergeant Arms for their hard work. Dean Marshburn, Jonas Cherry, Russell Salisbury, Dave Layton, and we also have our House Sergeant Arms, Garland Shepherd, with us today. We appreciate his work. Members, we're going to go through the bills on our agenda today, but the chair is going to take a moment of privilege before we do that. The chair's intent is to make sure that all of the members of the committee that are here, the press that are here, and the public that are here are able to see the bills that are being discussed. There was some conversation about the last time this committee met that some of the bills weren't made available. I will tell you that I personally checked with the Sergeant at Arms, and I don't believe anyone who asked for a copy of the bill was denied one. However, I will, as the chair and as a person responsible for this committee, I will be more proactive going forward. So I have directed the staff to provide copies of the bill to the press, and also copies are being made that it will be placed at the back of the room for members of the public to see as well. That being said, it is the intent of the chair that this committee take up the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 325 first. Is there objection to the proposed committee substitute for 325 being placed before the committee? Seeing none, it is so ordered. The chair will yield the chair to Chairman Torbett.
PCS S-325 is in front of us. Representative Lewis, you have the floor.
Members, again, good morning, and thank you for your time today. The proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 325, the short title, the Uniform and Expanded Early Voting Act, makes the following changes to state law. Beginning on line 7, it clarifies that early voting will open no earlier than the third Wednesday before an election in which absentee ballots are authorized. The chair has prepared a calendar to be passed out to members with extra copies going as long as they last, which shows that this would propose for the 2018 election that early voting would begin on Wednesday, October the 17th, and would continue 17 days, ending on Friday, November the 2nd. To be clear, this would provide 17 full days of early voting. Let me repeat, which I often do involuntarily, this would provide 17 days of early voting. Let me also point out that the next part of the bill simply deals with one-stop voting sites in the counties. If the county chooses to have one-stop voting sites, the one-stop voting sites would be open for a uniform number of hours and days. Doesn't make them choose to open additional early voting sites. Hopefully they will choose to do that, but it makes sure that when an early voting site is open, they are all open. And finally, on page 2 of the bill, section 4, this is simply a reporting requirement that the state board will submit an annual report on or before September 1st of each year detailing to the Joint Elections Oversight Committee the efforts that they have made at list maintenance, the voter list rolls in our state. Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to yield to questions at your direction.
Representative Dollar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Lewis, I probably should know this, but I don't. That 17-day period, that window that you have, does the local Board of Elections have to have those sites? And I'm not talking about the further provisions in the bill, but just generally speaking, does the Board of Election have to have those sites open for all of those days, or that is they could have it open all those days, or could they have it open for a lesser period of time if they didn't want to do Sundays, for example, or if they didn't want to do Wednesdays or something like that, or this require them to be open all of those days?
Representative Dollar, that's a very good, very good multifaceted question. Again, it's up to the counties, and if they're not able to agree with the state, there's no change to that process on where the early voting sites would be. When the early voting sites are picked, this would mandate that they are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. On the Monday through Friday. If a county has weekend voting, again, at their choice, this doesn't mandate them to do it. It certainly does not prevent them from doing it. It just says if they do it, all the sites that are open for early voting will also be open on the weekends.
Representative Lewis, I have a question. Representative Floyd, to your left.
Representative Lewis, are we looking at days or are we looking at hours? Are we totaling the hours? Because last time we were based on hours.
Representative Floyd, I appreciate the question. The hour requirement, if you will, that we had in place for the May 2014 primary, that's part of an enjoined act. This is not mandating any specific hours or tying back to any specific hours. This goes back to largely how the statute looked prior to 2014. So it is the number of days, but you could certainly multiply whatever days the county chooses. This is just saying the polls will be open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
A follow-up question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Representative Floyd.
I noticed that this Saturday, so could they opt to, the 17th is earlier, no earlier than the 17th, and then we have the 3rd, so could they opt to do the 18th and then also the 3rd,
No, sir. Representative Floyd, this would end the early voting on the Friday before the Tuesday, but it would be a full day and not a partial day with ununiform hours across the state.
Okay. Representative Lewis, Representative Willingham, center slightly right, has a question for you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at this, of course, you have 17 days, this includes the Sundays also, am I correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay, the other thing too, I think you said that the if you have multiple sites, then whatever time you open one, all those sites should be open at the same time.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Follow up, Representative Willingham.
So in other words, you can't stagger at days where you have one open a certain number of hours on Monday and Wednesday, and then you do something different on the other 2 days.
No, sir, that's largely what this bill is trying to prevent. It's just trying to provide a uniform platform. If you have early voting in your county, then your poll sites, your early voting approved poll sites will be open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., if I understood your question. Oh, staff has counseled me to further clarify. If you're open on the weekend, you can select the hours that you're open, but all the early voting sites have to be open those same hours at the same time.
Okay, thank you. I think that's a good thing to happen, because I know in my county we had some voting places open on certain days, and so people were kind of confused.
Yep.
And also they had them at different hours. And so I think this is a good way to go. Thank you.
Thank you for your words of support, Representative Willingham. We're going to Representative Harder. Representative Lewis will be to your left. Representative Harder, did you have a question?
No, just for a motion at the appropriate time.
Okay. Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a series of questions. Do you want them to come through you? Or?
Right now you can go through me. We'll see how they go.
Okay, I had a question for Chairman Lewis.
Yeah, proceed.
Okay. Chairman Lewis, was the executive director of the Board of Elections or anybody on the Board of Elections involved in the drafting of this bill?
Not to my knowledge. I've had no personal contact with the director or anyone on the board.
Follow-up, Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know how, have they had an opportunity to now review this PCS and comment to you, or do you know, have they brought forth any things that we need to consider about this bill?
Thank you for the question, Representative Jackson. I'm not aware of, unfortunately, the answer is probably no. I directed my staff to email the state chairman and the executive director the bill that I had anticipated we would consider this morning. As you know, we've issued another proposed committee substitute to reflect the original intent, which was these 17 days. We've also emailed that to them, but I've received no return correspondence. In full disclosure, I was not able to address this matter until after we adjourned last night, so it was about 11 o'clock.
Follow-up, Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, if you could, did you ever receive a complaint of something about having that last Saturday early voting? And the reason why I'm just wondering, when I look at the numbers, it seems that last week of early voting, when you look at them, you get more and more people every day. People procrastinate to the last minute, much like legislators. And that Saturday is usually very popular. And so I'm just wondering why we chose to cut out that Saturday and end on Friday night, if there was an administrative reason for doing that.
Well, thank you for that question. And let me begin by saying that I agree with you that over and over again, all the research I've done on early voting shows exactly what you just said in terms of the first day or two it's open, it's very, you know, the lines are long, it's full. And the last few days that it's open, the lines are long. Whether that occurs in a 10-day span or a 17-day span, I've not seen any difference in the way it works. Our goal was, as you know, originally or under the prior to 2014 law, the polls were supposed to close at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Sometimes that was 4 o'clock, sometimes it was 1 o'clock. It was very ununiform way to administer things. I am aware from past discussions that it does create somewhat of a challenge to update all of the poll books, to print the new poll books and get them back out to the counties if it drags on. I hate to say drags on, if it takes longer than the 1 o'clock time frame. So I thought we would make it uniformly close the early voting time at 7 o'clock on Friday night. It gives the election staff the chance to prepare for the Tuesday.
I'm assuming follow-up, Representative Jackson.
Yes, sir. Okay, now on the weekend hours, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. You have to have uniform hours in that if you're open on Sundays, every location has to be open. Every early voting site had to be open on that Sunday. But you wouldn't have to open at 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning. They could all be open 12 to 5 or something like that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
And follow up, Michelle?
Follow-up, Representative Jackson.
And those hours could be different from your Saturday hours, which, again, would just have to be uniform Saturday all across the county at every site.
Let me confirm and make sure. That's correct.
Follow-up, Representative Jackson.
From a practical standpoint of hiring people to come in and work, I guess, 12-hour days starting in middle of October, I mean, have we given any consideration to mandating 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., you know, as early as October 17th, and what that, how difficult that's going to be for some locations to recruit poll workers?
Representative Jackson, if you want to cut the number of early voting days, I'm afraid I'm going to have to fight you on that.
Is that your recommendation, Representative Jackson?
No, sir. Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Representative Jackson.
I think my question was more about starting at 7 a.m. Why do we pick that time for early voting for 17 days out?
Well, thank you for that question, Representative Jackson. I think if you can look back through the various transcripts of the debate we've had on this issue in the past, I have always maintained that we want as many people to have access to the chance to get to the polls as they can. The 7 a.m. time frame simply was many people work a traditional 8 to 5-ish type schedule, so the thought was perhaps they could vote on their way to work or their way home from work.
And final question for the chair.
The final question, Representative Jackson.
For you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Are we going to allow public to be heard on this bill today?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Floyd, for the second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had a series of questions, but my question also, Representative Willingham, touched on it, and that was the Sunday voting. That was something that there was a lot of discussions a couple of years ago about Sunday and the way certain communities use it as pews to the poll. So that, you know, that would really help, you know, a lot of communities that attend church service, that they leave church whichever way they travel to the poll. And my second question of it is this going to be a one time, or would this be a carrier forward of how we do election, early vote?
Thank you for the questions, Representative Floyd. First of all, there has never been an effort on my part to do away with Sunday voting. When we shortened the period earlier to 10 days, ultimately that's gone away now. A Sunday did go away as a result of that. This would fully restore in statute that Sunday. The second part of your question is this is contemplated to be the law going forward, not just for one time.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? All right, this time, Representative Lewis, I'm going to ask respectfully if you just hang out right there for a minute. I think we're going to go to those of you in attendance today. We're going to go with a two-minute clock. And I also want to take a moment right now. The documents that are going to be available in the back are being printed right now. We're running just a little bit behind. So you may, as soon as they come in, grab them, or you may want to hang out till afterwards, get them. Just whenever they come off the printing press in the basement, they're going to be rocket shot up this way. So hang in there. They're coming. With that, is there anyone from the audience that wishes to address the committee or speak on this item? If you would you carefully and slowly make your way to the microphone? Hang on 1 second.
Mr. Chairman, so that I can listen to the public, do you mind if I return to my seat and then come back if needed?
Not at all, sir. Not at all, sir. Excuse me, sir. What we're going to do is that when we address, relax, you'll have to, I think, hold the button down at your microphone, and please tell us your name.
Certainly. My name is Greg Flynn. I'm currently chair of the Wake County Board of Elections. I'm here in a private capacity. I have a few concerns about this bill. The main one is the requirement that early voting sites be open for 12 hours from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's one of the difficulties in managing elections is managing staff. Early voting sites usually have the best of our staff, but it's very difficult to get people to demand for those hours. The second issue related to having a 12-hour day is that resources are finite. They're flexible, but they have limits. If we concentrate all of our hours into a single day, it sort of limits our resources in spreading across the county in terms of the number of sites and the days that they're open. So I think normally we have a good return on 7 or 8 hour days. I don't think there are going to be that many more voters in a 12-hour day. And I think we would better serve the voters, at least of Wake County, in having more sites across the county. We're actually in the middle of considering a good distribution geographically and statistically across the county. So having more sites and widely distributed, and I think requiring a 12-hour day, especially in the middle, you know, we have good attendance at the start of early voting and at the end of early voting, but requiring a 12-hour day in the middle of that 17-day period is not an efficient use of resources. Thank you.
Thank you for your remarks and comments.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask him a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Jackson. We'll ask the gentleman if he would come back to the microphone, please.
Mr. Flynn, Chairman Flynn, when is your plan for early voting due to the state board?
I'm not sure when it's due, but we had scheduled July 10th as our public comment and meeting for public comment period and meeting to decide early voting hours. And we're actually trying to schedule a meeting for June 26th to gather information, data about early voting hours, sites, attendance, statistics, maps about distribution of registered voters in the county. So, you know, I've been on the phone and communicating with our elections director this week about it, and we're in the middle of it. He's talking with early voting sites about availability and accessibility. That's another issue, trying to get sites to meet our requirements. So that's where we're at.
Representative Floyd.
May I ask the gentleman a question?
Yes, sir.
Sir, when you seek or
ask. Hey, well, hang on one second. Sir, is this okay that they can address you with a question?
I'm fine with it.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Floyd.
When you seek volunteer or staff, whichever terminology you want to use, does the staff commit for 8 hours or some of them commit for 4 hours?
I'd have to defer to my elections director for the details, but my understanding is that there's some overlap. I'm not sure that staff, or at least that all staff, work a full shift. So there may be more than the number of staff that you would see at any one time required to man a particular site, and there are additional support staff.
Mr. Chair, you know, he just responded that they have some overlapping. So the 12 hours would be the same as 8 hours. You would have some overlapping or staff, or some staff person agreeing to work a half day, which is 6, and another person may work the other half as relates to volunteering. So staffing in some community, yes, may be a problem, but I see that as you advertise that it could be based upon full or part time. I know it's difficult for a person to work 8 hours a day, but those who opt to do that would list the hours in which they wish to participate in the electoral process.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Floyd. Representative Brawley.
Yes, I have.
And I would remind we don't debate with presenters. So. We're trying to. That's why I was asking you your permission if we can ask you some questions. Representative Brawley.
Mr. Flynn made a comment about how it's busy in the morning and it's busy late in the day. And I was wondering his opinion of opening early closing for several hours in the middle of the day and then reopening in mid to late afternoon into the evening.
I'm sorry if my comments were misunderstood. I was talking about the entire voting period, not the day. So when early voting starts, those early days have high attendance, and when it closes, there's high attendance. But it's the days in between, not the hours in the day.
Thank you for being open for questions. Seeing no others, is there anyone else from the audience that wishes to speak on this? If you would, I ask you to come up to the microphone. Be at ease and relax a little bit and tell us your name. And you'll need to hold the green or the black button that says push, I believe, and you'll be given 2 minutes, and the gentleman in front of you will help you keep track of that time.
Okay. My name is Isela Gutierrez, and I'm with Democracy North Carolina. I wanted to speak a little bit to the usage of the last Saturday of early voting. It is extremely popular, as Representative Jackson mentioned. In 2016, almost 200,000 voters used the last Saturday of early voting. And in 2014, a comparable election to the 2018 cycle that's coming up, 103,000 voters did. So that's a significant population. People really use that last Saturday. And moreover, that final Saturday is disproportionately used by African-American voters. In 2016, black voters made up 20.6% of voters overall in the state, but almost 29% of voters who used that last Saturday. So I don't think the intent is to have a disproportionate impact on any kind of voter. So I would caution the lawmakers about thinking about eliminating that last Saturday. And then finally, I'd also like to agree with Mr. Flynn's comments that I think ultimately the impact of the 12-day weekday requirement will disincentivize weekend access. It'll disincentivize counties' ability to have weekend hours, and they're extremely popular with all voters. Lastly, I'd like to say that overall, I'm afraid the impact will be to reduce options for voters. We may see fewer sites open. We may see fewer weekends open. I don't think, again, that's what voters appreciate, the flexibility of early voting. They appreciate the options they have for early voting. And so I would encourage the committee not to reduce the options available, not to pass any legislation that might have that inadvertent effect. And then finally, I'd say this really needs input from state and county board of elections officials. They are the ones who are implementing these laws, and we really need their input and their wisdom in developing new rules. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us today. Anyone else from the audience wishing to speak? And if you've been paying attention, please start with your name and hold the button down, and the gentleman in front of you will help you with a two-minute time. Excellent.
Yes, my name is Brent Lawrence with Common Cause North Carolina. I want to reiterate some of the comments that I have in our organization's real concerns about eliminating that last Saturday of early voting. We've seen that it's widely popular and one of the most popular days. And getting rid of it would limit access and options for voters, which we think is really important. And also just want to comment in general that we wish we'd had more time to read and digest this legislation. We saw it last night, first thing, and these kind of changes to our election process, we wish we all had a better chance for elections directors, administrators, and the public at large to weigh in on. So moving forward, encourage a little more time to digest that, and hope you'll reconsider the elimination of that last Saturday of early voting. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any further comments from the audience? Seeing none, questions from committee? Representative Doolin.
Thank you, Chair. A comment, not a question.
Go right ahead, Andy.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Turns out I'm seeing the map as for the first time, like everyone else is, and I understand the last Saturday being the 3rd of November, but I'm looking at the map, and there's two Saturdays for folks that can't get out to vote. Saturday the 20th. Of October and Saturday the 27th. And according to this calendar, the 27th of October would then be the new last Saturday. And folks, that if they can come on the 3rd or any of the other days, hopefully they're only going to vote once. And everybody's vote counts the same, whether you vote on the 17th of October or the 27th of October, the last Saturday. And so I would encourage people to come out and exercise their right to vote anytime they want between 7 and 7 for 17 days.
Thank you, Representative Doolin. Any further? Representative Zoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am interested in this last Saturday phenomenon from more of a mathematical viewpoint than anything else. I do have a background in statistics, having a master's degree in that. And what we frequently hear is descriptive statistics, the numbers on a particular day, which is informative to an extent. I would be really interested if there are any multivariate analysis of that, which look at not just the last day being a Saturday, as Representative Doolin said here, you know, if the last Saturday is a different day. If there's any studies like that, I'd like to know. I'd really be fascinated to see those, and I would certainly report my findings here to the committee based on a statistical evidence with whatever is presented.
Any further comments? Representative Jackson.
I had a question for the bill sponsor, if he would yield one more time.
He yields.
Chairman Lewis, would you have any opposition to changing the bill to have voting start on the 18th instead of the 17th and have that last Saturday open for at least a partial day and have a uniform set time to end? Without hearing testimony from the Board of Elections or someone that's a problem, I think we would all agree that the numbers show that to be a very popular day for whatever reason. If you look at the number of people voting, more people vote that day than the day before and the day before. I just wonder if you would consider that type of amendment.
Thank you for the question, Representative Jackson. I would, again, I believe that this provides a more uniform way. It provides more access, more consistent access to the polls. It provides the same number of Saturdays that were possible before. I think that you will see when the studies of the 2018 election going forward are done, you will see a spike the first couple of days it opens and a spike the last couple of days, just like the chairman from Wake County told us that we should expect to see. I believe it is more uniform to end the Friday before election day. And I will say also, from my own personal recollections of conversations and committee testimony in the past, that having the extra block of time to prepare for election day will be helpful.
Seeing no further questions or comments, Representative Hardister for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move for a favorable report on the PCS for Senate Bill 325, unfavorable to the original bill.
Members, you've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it, and motion passes. Relinquish back to Chairman Lewis.
Members, we're now going to move to the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 374. Is there objection to the proposed committee substitute for 374 being placed before the committee? Seeing none, so order. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland seek recognition?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to be carrying that bill. If we could move that to a later date, there's a minor discrepancy with one of the stakeholders I'd like to resolve.
The bill will be displaced.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torbin.
Ms. Kett.
The gentleman come back to the chair. Members, we're going to move instead to the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 571. while this, excuse me, the chair strike that. We're going to move instead to the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 561. Without objection, that bill will be before the committee. So order. The chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Floyd.
Prior to moving to your president, prior to moving to bill 374, I want to. Sign up.
Well, Representative Floyd, the chair, I'll be happy to address that in just a moment. We're going to discuss Senate, the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 561 first.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 561 is in front of you. Representative Lewis, you have the floor.
Members, Senate Bill 561, the as you have the proposed committee substitute for 561 that you have before you is the exact language that was vetted by this committee before and also vetted by the Committee on Finance. We have in a moment, I'm going to seek recognition from the chair to offer an amendment to put a section of this bill back in the bill that, again, this committee has already seen before. This was an administrative error on my part. I'm simply trying to get the bill largely back to the way it was when it left our committee on Tuesday night. So, Mr. Chairman, may I be recognized to send forward an amendment?
Representative Lewis, you're recognized to bring forward an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I hope you have copies of the amendment. This amendment is exact language that we've already approved. It was originally Section 1 of this bill. It's becoming Section 1 again and making the language that you have before you that's currently showing Section 1, it becomes Section 2. So I'll be happy to try to explain it, but again, we've already been through this one time.
Representative Dollar.
Right. I apologize, Chairman Lewis, but I must have been out of that meeting or something. But so this is what kinds of or just some examples of property that would be taxable. It's not the design, if I'm reading the bill right, that's currently not taxable that we're picking up and making taxable.
Well, thank you for the question. Let's say hypothetically that there is a city in North Carolina that may have given land for the construction of an NFL stadium, hypothetically, and that stadium is owned and is currently taxed at a rate to the county or whoever the taxing authority is.
Representative Lewis, can I interrupt? I do apologize. Representative Dollar, would you hold that to we're on the bill, not the amendment, please?
Oh.
Thanks so much. We're back on the amendment. Any questions? Representative Jackson, on the amendment.
The amendment that
is your microphone on?
Yes, sir. It seems to change the effective date. I don't see anything about section numbers changing, so I'm confused on the explanation.
Mr. Chair, we'd certainly need to get clarification. The gentleman, what I'd like the members to be considering is S-561 ASU-49 version 1, and then the little subtitle is CSSU-51. That's not what members.
Representative Jackson, is that what you have in front of you now? You have two of the same? Did you hear the one that was just? Okay, that's the one that we're addressing at this time. Any further questions on the amendment? Hearing none. Motion's on the amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ayes have it. Amendment passes. Back on the bill. And I'm going to assume at this time, Representative Dollar, you have a question.
Let me preemptively, if I may, Mr. Chairman, because I did hear the
Representative Lewis, you have the floor.
Representative Dollar, it's my understanding, and again, this has been through finance. If we would like to defer it to Chairman Brawley, that may be the better course of action, but it's my understanding that this would apply to very few venues across the state. I've heard of no opposition that's been offered to it. I think it's trying to clarify the law.
Chairman Lewis, were you wishing or relinquishing some time to Representative Brawley to help explain, or was that just a suggestion?
If the gentleman so desires, it's
probably. Representative Dollar? Moving on. Representative Jackson, did I see your hand again? Yes, sir.
So I'll use Chairman Lewis's hypothetical. In his hypothetical, how much revenue will Mecklenburg County lose as a result of this change in the law?
I think we're going to defer that question to Representative Brawley. Hypothetically.
And as the
if Representative I'm Lewis, I'm sorry.
Hypothetically, I believe it's around, I believe it's less than $300,000, but it is a significant amount, at least in the context of many smaller counties. And I believe the tax on the building itself is in the several million dollar range.
Representative Lewis, I believe Representative Jackson has relinquished his questions. Any further questions, Representative Lewis?
May I be recognized for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
You may, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move that. Oh, the chair, I'm sorry.
He just left. Which could very well be the one Representative Jackson has.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to send forward Representative Brawley's amendment that Representative Jackson has asked about.
You're recognized to send forward an amendment. Committee will stand at ease. Representative Lewis, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment was offered by Representative Brawley. It is simply a date change. I think his rationale is sound, and I would encourage members to support the amendment.
Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ayes have it. Amendment is adopted. Representative Lewis. On the bill, any further questions? Representative Lewis, you are recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 571 as amended be rolled into a new proposed committee substitute, and that proposed committee substitute be given a favorable report unfavorable to the original committee substitute.
Members of the committee, you've heard the question. All in favor signify by. Would you repeat that motion, Representative Lewis?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 561, as amended, be rolled into a new proposed committee substitute, and that proposed committee substitute be given a favorable report unfavorable to the original bill.
Thank you, Representative Lewis. Now you've heard the motion. Any questions on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ayes appears to have it. Ayes do have it. Motion carries.
Members, we're going to move now to the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1089. That bill is before us without objection. The chair was not sure we could do it in the time that we have left, but the speaker has said that he could have done it were he the chair. So we're going to we're going to move forward. The chair is going to recognize Representative Clampett and then Representative Jackson to present the bill. Representative Clampett, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first part of this bill is to do reversing the language as it's currently written. Excuse me. Allergies today. Excuse me again. As it's currently written on challenge to residency for an individual, the challenger has to prove the residency of the person, that the person doesn't live where they say. Well, if a candidate is running for office, the candidate has to prove their worth to run. In other words, the due process is reversed with that. The challenger makes the accusation, and the candidate has to take and prove that, yeah, I'm able to run whatever the allegation may be. So this just puts in line the same language that we've already got on residency to where the challenger has to prove the case that they're presenting. And it's not a matter of the candidate having to prove their innocence. They're guilty until they prove their innocence as it stands now, Mr. Chair. That's it. I'll be happy to take questions.
Representative Manu, did you have some further comments, sir? If so, you're recognized.
Well, he explained Section 1. I'll explain Section 2. Basically, without going in and reading it for you, what Section 2 does is this. In 2010, this legislature passed a bill and put it on the Constitution that for a constitutional amendment, which the voters passed, that a sheriff could not run for the office of sheriff if he had a felony conviction. In this past election,
if the gentleman was suspended, what purpose are you trying to Representative Burr? Okay, I'm sorry, please.
In the primary this year, the sheriff got his felony conviction expunged, so he was able to get on the ballot. This fixes that problem. So if there's... That's it in a nutshell. If you got any questions, I'll be glad to get more specific.
And Representative Jackson, would you like to come forward, please, and present Section 3?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 3 deals with people who are charged with the felony voting when they're ineligible. First brought this up a couple of weeks ago in elections, and the chair promised at that time to work with me. I appreciate the chair's indulgence in helping me find a bill that we could put this language in, and it would just, you would have to prove that they voted with the intent to commit a fraud and not for some mistaken reason or didn't realize. I think you have to have an intent for most of these crimes, and I don't think a strict liability is really what we intended originally, but this would clarify that. And so, again, I thank you for allowing me to put this in y'all's legislation.
Are there any questions for any of the three bill presenters? Representative Dollar.
For this intent, what's the evidentiary standard?
Well, for all criminal offenses, it would be beyond a reasonable doubt.
Representative Floyd, did you have a question, sir?
Yes, we getting so many bills. My question is on page 2, if I got the right bill. It's on page 2, line 37, 38, and 39. This is 1089, correct?
Yes, sir. The gentleman is correct. We are on the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1089. The gentleman's asking on page 2, line 37, and the gentleman may state
39.
Yes, sir. The gentleman may state his question.
It's just the word discretion. I mean, sometimes, you will may or may not. This depends on how I'm feeling today.
So I think we'll let Representative McNeil take a shot at this, perhaps, or staff, I think Representative Floyd is concerned about what discretion means. So let's defer that to staff. Ms. Churchill?
I believe this is just a policy decision. This would be only for those people who are running for the office of sheriff, and if a candidate challenge has been instituted for that particular individual, and it would leave the discretion to the county board or the state board of elections who is hearing that candidate challenge whether or not to disclose the confidential information related to any expulsions.
You know, the question that I have still, it leave it to a board. If the board, if I'm in good standing with the board may not. If I'm not in good standing with the board, then the board will. So I'm concerned about that portion of the language, either shall or whatever. But when you leave it at the discretion, it sort of gives an it sort of put that particular person in a limbo with his or her standing. That's the concern that I have.
Representative, do either of you wish to try to respond to that?
Representative Floyd, I understand your concern about this. I think it's probably best to leave this to these boards to make those decisions and let them be a little bit more flexible. They'll be the ones there hearing the evidence that's put before them and will probably be better at making a decision on what they need to hear and what they need to allow than we would by legislating. And I just feel like it's best to leave it to the ones that's actually hearing the evidence.
Father, Mr. Chair, I understand that. But when you, again, I'm looking at how that particular person standing with that particular board, they may or may not. It depends on how that board see that particular candidate. So if the language was changed, I'm just using that, either they shall, they will, you know, it's something more in the affirmative than to give them that discretion, that sort of like a 50-50 type of action on the part of the board. But it's just my suggestion.
Representative Soka for a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Representative Jackson a question or two.
The gentleman is recognized for that purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jackson, I'm not an attorney, so I want to make sure I just understand what your section's doing. It would still be against the law for a felon to vote. Is that correct? When he doesn't have his citizenship restored, it's not making it legal for someone who hasn't had his.
It's not making it legal in that the vote would be invalid, but if someone did it mistakenly thinking their rights had been restored, they would not be subject to criminal prosecution.
Okay, follow up?
The gentleman's recognized for
it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what is the fraud? Isn't this kind of circular logic? If you're breaking the law by voting, I just don't understand the intent to commit fraud. He's breaking the law, and I get what you're saying, that he might have forgotten, or I'm sure that when people are released from prison, they're told these things. So what is the standard what is the fraud being committed when he's already breaking the law? I just don't understand that.
Basically, they would be, you'd have to prove that they knew they were ineligible to vote and committed, that voted anyway. Right now, under the statute, it's a strict liability offense. It doesn't matter if you were off by one day, you miscalculated, or you were never told. It doesn't matter. You've committed a felony under the current law. So this takes away strict liability and says that you have to prove someone's intent, that they knew they were doing something wrong.
Follow for a comment?
The gentleman was recognized to comment.
Thank you for those questions. My only comment on that is it seems to me it's very difficult to prove a negative. You know, how do I know that you didn't kick your dog this morning? Well, I have to prove that you did. I mean, that's, you can't do it. Maybe that's a bad analogy, but it seems like kind of circular logic there, and I understand the intent of what you're trying to do, but I don't think I can support this.
Representative Brawley, for what purpose, gentlemen, seek recognition?
I wanted to ask Representative Jackson a question about his bill, if I may.
Let's be at ease just a moment. The chair needs to confer with the speaker regarding this time of session. Please. The committee will be at ease. Members, per the rule of the House, the House is going to convene at noon. Therefore, this committee is going to stand in recess. We will meet during a recess of the House later today. There being the case, this committee does stand in recess.